Back to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get it going. Happy Monday. Hello, friends, and welcome to a Monday edition of Flames Talk. It's Monday, May 12th, with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text line open at 960-960. Lots to get to on this Monday. Hi, Wes. How are we doing, bud?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Doing all right. Hope you had a good weekend.
Mother's Day. Always good weekend.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot yesterday was my... I
hope you didn't totally forget.
I did remember yesterday.
Okay.
I just forgot now that yesterday was indeed Mother's Day. Yeah, we got lots to get to. We've got Owen Newkirk in Dallas a little bit later on. He's going to join us to take a closer look at the Stars and Winnipeg Jets, which has been a really interesting series so far in round number two. But, you know, on Friday, you and I did our top 10 Flames prospects, and I really enjoyed the segment. I really enjoyed, got a lot of good feedback to it. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of, because it's one of those just straight up discussion pieces,
yeah,
where you and I were going, not a lot of like on the fly, like it wasn't like a big opinion thing for the text line to jump in on. But I did find after the beautiful Shan Virgie put together those graphics, posted them on Instagram and Twitter, did find that started to get some feedback on the rankings and some people who thought this or that on what we went through. Now, I do want to preface that neither Wes nor me are prospects experts. Neither of us are scouts. Neither of us are watching copious amounts of video of these prospects once they're in the Flames organization. But, you know, based on people that we speak to in hockey, in the Flames organization, so on and so forth, I think we came up with a decently educated prospects list.
Yeah.
Cross-referenced it over the weekend with some of the other prospect lists out there and some of the other people that you really trust and who do watch copious video and who were in the scouting realm leading up to last year's draft and prior drafts and so on and so forth. And I definitely noticed a few things. So I thought we'd just kind of react to some of that to kick off the hour and kick off the day on Flames Talk, because I did, there is about four or five players that I saw pop up on, whether it be on Twitter or in the Instagram comments, once we published that list and some of the feedback. What did you find for responses? Did you anything that jumped off the page to you?
You know, I've seen the handful of guys that you jotted down, and I think you sort of covered them all off. The big one for me, and I think maybe a little bit of, I don't know if recency bias is the right way to put it, but with Andrew Bacha returning to the Medicine Hat Tigers lineup for game one and two of the WHL final, I think the most common refrain perhaps was that we were sleeping a little bit on Andrew Bacha, which I know we'll get into, but that was the one that probably popped the most for me.
That was probably the guy that I saw the most pushback on as well. So maybe, first of all, I appreciate all of the opinions, and I love the feedback. I could do without the holier than thou. Like, what are these guys? This guy, this is ridiculous. How did you, this guy doesn't even, but like, okay, rant. I get it that we all have our opinions, but let's not be, I just cannot stand, I don't think you've watched more video than Scott Wheeler and Stephen Ellis and some of these guys who also have similar thoughts or like, let's just, enough with the holier than thou. You guys know nothing. You can have different opinions. That's what's awesome about it. But just because somebody's higher on a list than you have doesn't mean you need to be a jackalope about it. So that would be that would be my only piece of feedback in return.
I think maybe,
and there's only, I'm saying that to about two specific people that I saw in my mentions or on the comments.
That, I think that brings us to Basha quite nicely because, you know, I saw one person say he's in the Flames' top two or three prospects, which I, and hey, listen, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I think having talked to lots of people in the organization and sort of summarizing the conversation that you and I had Friday, and it's there for the taking on the podcast downloads if you want to go, if you missed it. But
where would you get those podcasts even?
There's an order to them, but probably Amazon.
Well, you've already
Apple
screwed up the order.
Yeah.
Spotify. Well, then there's Seeker.
Don't forget Seeker. Yeah. Don't forget Seeker. I think talking to people in the organization and maybe why I was a little bit surprised by the strength of the response on Andrew Basha is I don't think because he's been playing with an ankle injury for as long as he has, and because he missed almost all of the season, I don't think the Flames totally know what they have there. And I think that was a part of the conversation you and I had is there a spark plug there that could be a very good player for the Flames? Absolutely. Is the toolkit intriguing? Absolutely. But how high can you put Andrew Basha on a list of prospects when you simply just haven't seen him, right? He's been playing through an ankle injury going back to his draft season. He'd been sidelined since, was it early December of this year?
Yeah.
Had ankle surgery. He's been hanging around the Saddle Dome, sort of bouncing back and forth between there and Medicine Hat, and just played his first WHL playoff game of this spring on Friday night. Happened to score a goal. A little bit of a gift, but happened to score a goal on his first shift back, which is a cool moment. But
he's got a goal and an assist now in two playoff games for the Tigers.
So he's poised, in my estimation, to be a guy who could kind of rocket up the list. But I have trouble putting him over some guys who we've just seen it over a more extended stretch. Like, does he fascinate me? Absolutely, but to have him on my personal list surge past Karens, who put up 60-some points in the AHL this year, or a Stromgren, who is a little bit of a riddle at times, but was second on the Wranglers in assists and tops among forwards, to move him past even a guy like Etienne Morin, it didn't make sense from my standpoint because we haven't seen enough. Is he maybe the leading candidate to rocket up that list? Potentially, but we just haven't seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I know how much excitement there was when he got drafted in Vegas because I know there were a lot of people wondering, like, how has Basha not been taken at 24? It's 28 now. Like, as the first round went along and he still remained on the board, I know Flames fans became more and more excited that maybe the Calgary product, shout out Garrison Pub,
great Monte Cristo.
By the way, the Garrison Pub, home of the Flames Alumni Chronicles. That's where every episode has been recorded, is at the Garrison Pub with Croner and Colin Patterson. I digress. There was a lot of excitement when Basha was drafted. Mm-hmm. The numbers in his draft year were quite strong, so on and so forth. But I guess when you take a look at some of the other players that you do have a little bit more of a book on, and you take a look at their paths to potentially being NHL guys. There's no way he wasn't going to be in my top 10. I think when I ended up putting them all together, I was a little surprised that he ended up being at number 9 on my list. He was number 9 on my list, number 10 on your list. But I do think part of it is the fact that we're talking about a guy that we just don't have as much of a book on at this point because he didn't play as much this year. So, and I am all for these things changing, and I'm all for being completely off. I'm all for having guys be way higher when it's all said and done. I think about, you know, if we go back like 7 years ago, a little bit more, maybe 7-8 years ago. Like, where would Andrew Mangiapane have been on the list of top 10 prospects, right? Probably right in and around where Basha is.
Sure.
And yet he's gone on to be a really damn good NHLer.
Yeah.
And you know, I know he scored 35 the 1 year and maybe never gets back there, but that's a guy who's going to flirt with 15 to 20 goals every year for most of his career. And that guy ended up being a whole lot higher than I think a lot of people would have had him on their prospect rankings.
I think why I'm so curious to see where Andrew Basha can take this is he told my colleague Danny Austin last week as he was working his way back to the lineup that he felt like in his draft year, excuse me, and then this season when he was continuing to play through that ankle injury, he said he thought he was playing at about 60%. And at 60%, he was able to make enough of a case that, as you said, a bunch of people thought he should be a first-round pick, right? When the Flames selected Matvei Gridin over Andrew Basha at that spot toward the end of the first round, a lot of people were hoping they'd take the Calgary kid there. And as it turns out, they come back on the next morning in the draft for the second round. They wind up with both of them. And so if that's how many points, if that's how effective Andrew Basha could be at what he characterized as about 60%, that bodes really well, right? And yet starting 3 nights ago in Medicine Hat, continuing on through the rest of the WHL final, I think the Flames are actually getting their first glimpse of what Andrew Basha at close to full steam can look like. And if it's as exciting as some people think it is, yeah, he will climb that list. You and I reiterated a gazillion times on Friday that this was difficult to do this year because of the depth of the prospects, right? We're going to get to some guys that we left off the list altogether.
Yeah.
Basha certainly becomes a candidate to be a pretty quick riser. But again, you know, I think I had Rory Karen seventh, and he was the top scorer among under 23 players in the American Hockey League this season.
Yep.
It's not like we had a bunch of slouches and then Andrew Basha.
Yeah. He was the other one that I got a little bit of pushback on, even from a couple of people who had texted me, not publicly, just like people that ended up texting me and said, you know, people that I trust their hockey opinions on. Battaglia was another one that was like, yeah, you're probably too low on him. I had Battaglia number 10. You had him number 9. And then I get it. Same idea. Like, Basha didn't have a full season, but probably would have been in the same realm point-wise. Battaglia, 40 goals, 90 points in Kingston. Like, that's some really good numbers in a good league. And again, it was tough because Battaglia's a second-round pick, was their fourth pick in this most recent draft, was one of the two second-round picks along with Basha, another highly skilled forward. It was hard putting him at number 10 as well. It was hard having him that low down the list. I think part of the problem is there's a lot of D-men that seem to, from Muse to Brestevich to obviously Parekh, I think the amount of D-men that are in this conversation have made it a little bit difficult. But I again, Battaglia was one of those, had you asked me before thinking about it, like, oh, where do you think he would be? I probably would have had him closer to the middle of the list than near the end of the top 10. Yet that when I started to research and put it all together, he ends up being number 10 on the list.
Do you think, buddy, that as well is just a reflection of maybe what hasn't worked in this specific market in the past? And what I'm getting at when I say that is the Flames haven't had a great track record with guys who are prolific scorers that just need to work on their skating, right? Like we've seen those guys come through in past drafts where it's like, oh, this guy's got a lot going for him. We just need to work on the skating. And I think, you know, anyone who listens regularly knows that I think Danielle Fujita is such an ace up the sleeve of this organization. And she's started to change that, right? We've seen what she's done with Matt Coronato and with Idar Suniev and with Connor Zarya. And so maybe that concern goes away. But if there was one thing that maybe led me to having Battaglia where I did instead of a little bit higher, it's that concern can be a big one for me. If the skating needs to improve, that's one that always makes me really sort of question whether a player can reach that potential.
Yeah. I really enjoyed talking to Jacob at the draft. Really enjoyed watching the progress this year. I mean, those are not numbers to scoff at all. 90 points, 40 goals, had about 16 points in 11 playoff games. His Kingston went to game 7 of round 2 in the OHL playoffs. Like, definitely a lot to like with that player as well. And I think with both Basha and Battaglia, you really like the potential ceilings. What I liked about the 2024 draft is that Craig Conroy and Todd Button and the hockey ops and scouting staff really went heavy on the skill side of things, the hockey sense side of things, mm-hmm. and the upside side of things. And to me, that's for an organization that does not have the same high-end talent that a lot of other teams do. They don't have a Celebrini waiting in the wings. Dallas had Stankoven for the longest time. It's like, just wait till Stankoven gets here. You know, prior to 2024's draft, really wasn't a whole lot of that. Whereas now it's like, okay, well, wait till Parek gets here. And you're like, what if a Basha hits? Or what if a Henry Muse hits? Or whatever the case may be. I really like the way the Flames approached this draft. I really like the way that they went heavy on the skill and the upside part of things.
It's one of the benefits, isn't it, of having a bunch of picks, is that you can, you know, when you have that many pitches or that many swings, you can take a little bit more of a heavy cut, as yep. opposed to when, and we've seen this in Calgary in years and in regimes past, where you get to the draft with 3 or 4 picks and there's a huge amount of pressure to get either a kind of quote unquote safe picks, or there's a huge amount of pressure to get guys who are maybe closer to pro ready. And I think over the years, what we've learned is, especially when you get into the second round and beyond, sometimes you do have to wait, right? A guy like Battaglia is going to take some polish, and he'll be back in the Ontario Hockey League next season. A guy like Andrew Basha is certainly going to need some seasoning in the American Hockey League. You go, you know, further down the list, you've got guys like Henry Muse and Luke Misa going the NCAA route. There's a development curve and a patience that's going to be required with all these guys. But I totally agree with you. One of the things that I liked about the Flames' most recent draft class, and one of the reasons it's, I think, earned such rave reviews so far, is that was those were a lot of quote unquote gambles on high talent guys. And suddenly you had 4 of the top 25 scorers in the OHL this year. You had, in Battaglia, 1 of 8 guys to score 40 goals in that major junior league. And so you can sort of see, as you gaze into the future, if even half of these high skill swings work out, you're going to have a lot of talent coming up the pipeline.
Okay. So then why wasn't Henry Muse on my list? On your list? There was a little bit of that, like, you know, where's Muse on one of these lists? I had Henry Muse on my list. You did not. And we talked about all this on Friday, so we'd just be revisiting that. But that was one of the areas that there was a little bit of pushback as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get it. I second-guessed myself as I was
Muse
making the list.
Number 7 on my list.
So there were two things at play for me. I really do wonder, on the right side of the Flames blue line, like, my number 1 and 2 were Zane Parekh and Hunter Brustevich. And so with Mackenzie Weegar signed for 6 more years, and with my top 2 prospects in the organization also being right shot defensemen in Parekh and Brustevich, I'm not sure where the sort of pathway leads for Henry Muse. I'm not sure how he winds up getting the sort of opportunity that he's going to need. And the other thing, and I said this on Friday, I'll just repeat it, you know, a guy that neither of us had on our lists was Jeremy Poirier. And Jeremy Poirier led the Wranglers in assists this year. Jeremy Poirier was 3 seasons ago on the AHL rookie team. Jeremy Poirier is another guy who put up gaudy offensive numbers at the junior level. And the question was, okay, is he strong enough? Is he bought in enough? Are there all these things? Is he going to be a good enough defender? And that, you know, when I talk about sort of guys that have maybe not panned out in the past, making you shy away from a guy who's not a great skater, I just wonder why Henry Muse dropped to where he did in the draft and whether that defensive stuff is going to ultimately hold him back. And with no obvious opportunity on the right side, the reason that I couldn't find a spot for him in my top 10 is I just don't see the path. I'd love to be proven wrong by Henry Muse. I have a blast talking to him. He's one of the more insightful interviews I've done all season. He'll tell you that he was a forward up until just a few seasons ago. He thinks that sort of arc has him, like, he thinks his trajectory will be a lot different because he just doesn't have those same reps on defense. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I just, when I thought about Jeremy Poirier, a left shot, and, you know, why he wasn't on my list, I wondered how something similar might translate for Muse. A little bit more of a, you got to prove it to me.
I do think in part of this conversation, there's a little bit of recency bias going on.
Sure.
Like, you know, I think that because this year's draft was viewed as so strong by so many people, it's like, well, where is player A or Y? Like, where is player A or B mm-hmm. from the 2024 draft? Like, I really had a hard time not putting Misa on my list. I really, Luke Misa, ever since I like development camp and Penticton and main camp, Misa has done nothing but impress me for, you know, he gives me strong Andrew Mangiapane vibes, different players. But similar size. I mean, maybe not different players, but or maybe there's some similarities in what they do. But what I like about Misa is that every time I see him, he pops. And I see like a little, I'm trying to think of some comparables that I would put there. Like I see a little Derek Ryan in him. I see a little like a bottom six effective, like number three, number four center with some speed and, you know, a little bit of offensive upside. I'm not sure how much of his upside translates to the NHL, but I had a hard time not getting Luke Misa in my top 10.
Yeah.
That was one that I really debated and struggled with myself.
Yeah. One of the things that, and this was probably my biggest takeaway from the development camp scrimmage last year, and the more I've asked people about it, the more it's been confirmed for me. Like, one of the big things about Luke Misa is he just has that blend of skill and smarts that makes him a really good supporting piece with really good players. Right. And I think of actually, as you mentioned the comparison, that's something you would have said about Derek Ryan too. Like, Derek Ryan was a guy who obviously took a very different path, was playing U sports, then was playing overseas. He was a guy that you could sort of plug onto, in a pinch, plug him onto a good line. And you wouldn't think, man, he doesn't have the smarts to play with those guys or the skill to play with those guys. And I think Luke Misa is very much the same way. He's never going to be a guy who, I shouldn't say never, he's not projected to be a guy who sort of drives a scoring line at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. And yet, he's a guy that I think you put him with the right players and you'd be pretty happy with the results. Let me circle back. We were talking about Muse. Did we have 9 of the same players on our list? And
yes, you didn't have...
I didn't have Muse and you didn't have William Stromgren.
Yes, I did not have Stromgren on mine.
And that, you know, I'm not trying to get my back in the corner and stick up for myself for not having Muse on the list, but it's probably an example of how much talent there is in the Flames organization, in the sense that...
And I did see a lot of that, like a lot of like responses to, hey, the fact that player X or Y didn't make this list shows that mm-hmm. shows that this has become a pretty deep prospect system. I think,
yeah,
I think in January, Scott Wheeler at The Athletic had them number 13 overall, and they have risen from the high 20s to 13th overall, and that's only going to get better with what they do next month at this year's draft.
So in Poirier and Stromgren, you have the two assist leaders for the Wranglers this season. You have two guys who are both in their early 20s, and for both of us, Poirier wasn't on the list, and for Stromgren, wasn't on your list,
yep.
Right? And that's not me taking a shot at your list at all. It's just an example of
it hurts a little.
It's an example of how much talent there is, and I think how recency bias maybe cranks the excitement level, right? You know, when you've only seen a player once, you know, we saw Bashaw in a couple preseason games. Like when your viewings are limited, there's a lot of intrigue there. Whereas maybe we've had a little more opportunity to see the warts on a Stromgren or a Poirier.
The last guy before we hit the text line, last guy I'd mention would be Hanzek, who a lot of people are like, he's way too high on your list. You had him 4, I had him 5. A lot of people thought that Hanzek was maybe too high on the list.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are down on Hanzek right now, and I understand that. Like the numbers were pretty middling for first round pick. I know it was just his first pro season. The key, and if you go listen to the podcast from Friday, you'll hear us outline this in greater detail. But the key for Hanzek is going to be, are you willing to consistently play a power forward game? Because there's a combination of size and speed there that the Flames don't have in another player in their pipeline. Like, they don't have another 6'4" forward who can skate like that and has the skill to go with it. Now, those guys either put all those pieces together or they become a little bit frustrating because you can see all the potential there, and yet you don't see it often mm-hmm. enough. And the question is, I guess, where we had Hanzek on our list was probably an expression of optimism that he eventually can put it all together. And those who are saying he's way too high are probably a little more pessimistic about that. Is that fair?
Yep, I think so. Here's some text, 960-960. More text to this segment than when we were actually going through it on Friday. But again, I understand why. This one from Dylan. Gridden is an absolute steal. The way he really draws defenders in while carrying the puck and still being able to find soft spots without it, and his ability to score from distance and in close reminds me of a Gimla. Not saying he'll be that good. That's a high bar. But if he translates those qualities to the NHL one day, he could end up being a very good player. And knowing that you guys both appreciate strong defensive players, can you speak on Axel Hertig a bit? He might make my top 10. And he took some huge strides this year. Axel Hertig did with the Calgary Hitmen, was a huge part of their run to round 2 and what they did in this year's regular season. So Hertig has turned, and you know, I look at him and Eric Jameson, a couple of defensemen that are kind of more in that defensive stay-at-home mold, who both took some big strides this year in the Western League.
Which brings me to another guy that neither of us had on our list, and that's Jan Kuznetsov, who's a couple seasons further into his development as that stay-at-home sort of defenseman. Like, with the offensive guys always pop, right? Perek, Brustevich, Muse, Etienne Morin, even Jeremy Poirier to some extent, whereas the Flames have some interesting guys on that kind of stay-at-home side of things with Kuznetsov. I'm not sure whether you'd say Grushnikov maybe stalled a little bit this season with the Wranglers. Ilya Solovyov's in there, and Axel Hertig's the guy, too, that you talk to people around the Saddle Dome. He certainly impressed during his season with the Hitmen.
This reads, where do you guys see Lucas Siona as a potential third or fourth liner down the road? And that's probably what he translates to. I don't know. I know that Siona took some strides this year in the American League. I know the Flames were happy with the strides that he took in the American League. Javon says Etienne Morin looks good on Moncton in the Q final. He does. We both had him on our list. I had Morin.
I think we both had him at number 6. That was one we were
both at 6.
We were lined up on. And again, I'll just repeat myself slightly. The Flames were really, really pleased with the way Etienne Morin responded in multiple ways this season.
Yep. And finally from Brett, Sam Honzek's a bust, just can't stay healthy, and no way he's a center in the NHL.
Nobody's a bust at age 20. Certainly, Sam Honzek has.
He's not even 2 years in to being with the organization. I know it has not been a great start.
Yeah,
suggest that he's a bust, I think is extremely premature.
He has some proving it to do. The pieces are there: the size, the skill, the skating ability. He has to prove, and it's Brett, right? Sorry, sent that text. He's right about the durability. You know, injury issues certainly do threaten to derail Sam Honzek's development. Like, he's missed too much time already. I just think to talk about a guy who was drafted 23 months ago as a bust at this point is a little that's a little ahead of schedule.
Yeah. Pat and Wes, if you missed it, the lists are on social media, on Instagram or Twitter at Sportsnet960. And the segment is from Friday, available wherever you get your podcasts on the Flames Talk podcast feed. Pat and Wes, along with you, underway on this hour of Flames Talk. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you as we continue on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. And it is a 2-1 series lead for the Dallas Stars in their second round set with the Winnipeg Jets. Sunday afternoon, 5-2 Stars win on home ice to take that 2-1 series lead. And that series has been an absolute blast to watch so far. Let's head down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and head out to Dallas right now. Awesome to have our buddy Owen Newkirk with us. Owen from DLLS Sports, the DLLS Stars podcast, joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Owen, awesome to hear from you, my friend. How are you?
Likewise, guys, I'm just driving home through what we call the absolutely lovely Dallas traffic after another very successful Stars podcast today.
Well, that was actually, I say, had Ralph Strangis on, the former voice of the Stars, was watching in on YouTube as you guys set things up for game three. Exactly. Hey, tell us about, as you get ready for game four, rather, tell us about game three on Sunday afternoon, as I know there was a controversial-ish game-winning goal that gets scored in the third period, but it ends up being a 5-2 win for Dallas over Winnipeg. What did we make of game three?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, it's funny, we always talk about this, and I'm sure this is no different in any other NHL market, that it's just so funny how you ride that emotional roller coaster, whether you're a fan, broadcaster, media member, etc. It doesn't matter, because when the team that you follow, you cover, you cheer for, whatever it is, when they win a game in the playoffs, everything tastes better. The air smells cleaner and fresher. Food just seems to be more enjoyable, right? And then you're never going to lose again. And then if you lose, it feels like this thing is just a shell. It could fall apart in any second. It's a house of cards. And we're posers. This team isn't as good as we thought they were. So you win the first game in Winnipeg, you're feeling great. You've already wrenched home ice advantage away from the Jets. It's exactly what you went for. Then game two, you know that Winnipeg has to win that game because they're not going to go to Dallas down 0-2. They have all the urgency of, we've got to save our season, even though it's only the second game. So they win. They play really well. I didn't think the Stars were as bad as 4-0, but okay, whatever. So then the third game, and you've got your split, but you're a little worried because, well, what happens if you don't win game three? Now you're down 2-1. Well, the Stars did something that they haven't done for a while, a couple of things. One is score first. That's a nice change of pace. And score a goal without Mikko Rantanen contributing on said goal.
Yeah, I didn't think that was allowed.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm okay with it if he wants to just keep scoring, right? His numbers are absurd. But to go through all that, 2-2 game, and then that, I understand there's a controversy there. I don't see why it is, and I'll talk about it if you guys want to. But what really stands out to me is that after that goal stood, the Stars and Rantanen scored less than a minute later, and then they got another one, and they won the third period of a tie hockey game 3-0. And to me, that was a really important statement for them, and now they've got to try to do it again tomorrow night in Game 4.
We would be very, very remiss if we did not immediately ask about Mikko Rantanen. And I know that he has been the story of the postseason so far for Dallas. But look, there was mass hysteria when the Stars acquired him and then signed him to that long-term extension from Carolina. And the irony then playing Colorado in round one wasn't lost on anybody. What he's done in this postseason is as transcendent as I can remember. Here we are in the middle of round two. Tell us about your expectations for Rantanen when he was acquired compared to what he's done as a member of the Stars.
Well, guys, I would be absolutely lying through my teeth if I said this, because nobody would have expected this. Look, when he was acquired at the deadline, the numbers that stand out, I mean, we've seen Rantanen play for a decade, and he's a phenomenal top 10 scorer in the NHL. And I remember when he was drafted in 2015, I was hoping that he would fall to the Dallas Stars at 12, and he didn't make it by two picks. And Stars ended up taking Denis Gurianov, who had a good little run but didn't pan out to be anywhere near Mikko Rantanen. And that most players don't. When he was acquired, the number that really stood out was 100 points in 80 playoff games. You're going, wow, that is really impressive. If we get anything close to that guy, that's pretty exciting. So, you know, and naturally, he's had a very tumultuous season with the trade first to Carolina in January and then the trade to Dallas at the deadline in March. And so it's understandable that things are sort of riled up a little bit. The emotions are all over the place. When players aren't that comfortable, you expect production to drop a little bit. And he actually put up a couple of points in his first couple games and then was a little quieter after that. That is totally understandable. And I remember thinking at one point, probably about 2 or 3 weeks in, you just hope that you get to see. They signed him to an 8-year extension, which has not started yet. That's the you know, this is not a rental at the deadline kind of move. This is a long-term organizational shift to have Mikko Rantanen on your team for the better part of a decade. So, all that being said, you say, well, okay, he's been good, but they've been tinkering with lines, and then, you know, there was an injury to Jason Robertson the last game of the regular season, right after it looked like he, Hintz, and Rantanen were starting to really gel quite a bit for that top line. And then he played 4 playoff games against Colorado, and he had 1 assist, and it was not dominant, or it wasn't even average scoring for him. Well, then Game 5 happened, and things took a turn, and it's the crazy thing to me is he has lapped the field. He has 17 points in his last 6 playoff games, and that's almost double the next highest score in the playoffs in that span. So if you go from April 28th, to now, he's almost twice as many points as the field, and that's crazy.
Yeah, no doubt, and it's been a lot of fun to watch so far, especially recently with Mikko Rantanen in a Stars uniform. We're chatting with Owen Newkirk of DLLS Sports joining us here on Flames Talk on this Monday. It's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. Wes?
Oh, and I want to stick on Rantanen for a second. Like you said, it didn't start so swimmingly in these playoffs. He had one point, 1 assist through 4 games. Did you know, understanding the Dallas market is still sort of getting to know Mikko Rantanen and what makes him tick, did you learn anything about Rantanen and the way that he responded to all that criticism that now seems like it was more like months ago than just a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, what really, that's actually a great question. And the thing that really stands out to me is when he was acquired at the deadline, he went and met the team in Edmonton. So he didn't have an introductory press conference in person in Dallas for about a week. I think it was actually the following Friday because they were in Edmonton, and then I believe they went right to Vancouver after that and, you know, had to come back because then they had to go back out and do the Colorado game, which was weird to think that right after being traded for the second time in the season, now he's going to face his old team in Denver for the first time, and that was a whole thing. Well, when he came out, instead of the normal day-to-day press availability that we have in Dallas at the practice rink where after the skate you go into the dressing room and you talk to the players, and then we go into the media center that we have in Frisco and talk to Pete DeBoer, they said, you know what? Everybody wants to talk to Mikko. We're going to do our room availability. Then we're going to go bring Mikko to the podium. You know, TV cameras are here today. They haven't had a chance to talk to him for about a week. Let's do it that way. And Mikko came in, and the first thing he did was he stood up for himself and dispelled the rumors and the conversation coming out of Carolina that said he never gave the Hurricanes a shot at being able to sign him. And he said that is categorically false. I went with an open mind. It wasn't until about a week before the trade deadline that I realized this was not the right fit for me to sign an 8-year deal. For hockey reasons and others perhaps as well, but that's what he said. And he was adamant because it had been said, hey, there were things from Carolina that he never gave us a chance. He was specifically saying, I never wanted to leave Colorado. I got traded. I went to Carolina. I gave it a shot. It's not going to work for me for the next 8 years. And so I thought I was doing right by them to say, rather than lose me at free agency for nothing after trading away Natchez and Drury and picks and stuff, this is, send me somewhere. Here's a place I'd like to go, and you can get something back for it. And guess what? That's not lip service. What I've learned is he's a pretty straightforward, honest guy who says exactly how he feels. And to be honest with you, when you hear that, you first go, okay, well, you know, they're all playing different sides. No. He absolutely means it. And he does, you know, that's the amazing thing. Then you get into the playoffs, and he's been asked because of this heater that he's on to do everything. You know, he's on Sportsnet, he's on TNT or ESPN every night. He's doing interviews before games. He's doing locker room availability every day. And he has been nothing but patient. He's answered every question. He's been extremely approachable and polite. And to deal with all the things that you could understandably say, all right, you might be a little on edge or frustrated with this or that, he has been the consummate professional. And this is not me. You know, I've worked for the Stars for a decade. I don't work for them anymore. I'm not just fluffing this to make it sound good. This is truly how I see it. And he just, I'm more impressed with Mikko Rantanen, the human being, than we all are going, he's a Superman on the ice.
Not too many teams get through a first round slugfest like that and then take a lead in the second round without their best defenseman. What can you tell us about Miro Heiskanen?
Well, my hunch is, here's the thing. The other day, Pete DeBoer said he will play in the second round right before game one. He said, I believe it will. I don't know when, but I think he will play in the second round. So, okay, we took him at face value. We started watching Miro skate a little harder in practice and do some things that I hadn't seen in the first round. You know, the entire first round series against Colorado, there was conversation about he's day-to-day. He could be here. You just don't know. But what we were watching in the on-ice that we saw was, well, he's skating, but he's not exactly putting it through the paces at the hardest exertion level that we can see. I don't think he was necessarily testing at that point. Well, then we started to see that ramp up a bit more with he and Jason Robertson. This was before Robo played in game number one against Winnipeg. And you go, okay, maybe he is a little bit closer. And Pete today said the same thing. He's sticking with his assessment that he believes Miro will play in this round. The more we go about it, the more there's just, and I don't have anything to report on this. It's just sticking in my gut a little bit of, I don't know if he's going to play in this round because – the longer, I mean, the biggest thing that they've talked about is that this isn't just a player or a coach or a trainer thing. You know, Miro Heiskanen had substantial serious knee surgery. They never said specifically what it was, but we all saw the collision with Mark Stone. It was back in late January, and he had knee surgery again in January. And you don't just have major surgery and come back less than 5 months later and feel 100%. Now, Miro is a supremely talented player and an elite athlete, so he's probably on the faster timetable than some, but there's always been a doctor's element to this from the surgeon that isn't just, oh, yeah, you feel good, go right ahead. Because the one thing the Stars don't want to do is lose Miro Heiskanen for the long term because they rushed him back too quickly in the playoffs right now, which is something we've seen happen with various players over the years. I remember back in all the way back in 2016 after Tyler Seguin suffered that freak Achilles cut during that season. He tried to come back against the Minnesota Wild and tore his calf muscle, you know, all interconnected, and things just didn't work out that way. So I think it would be really craven of the Stars to, and I don't think they're going to get Miro back too early just for the sake of having him in when you might cost him next season or a good off season and the next 5 or 10 years.
One more for you, Owen. We're chatting with Owen Newkirk in Dallas of DLLS Sports, joining us here on Flames Talk. You know, we saw a really close game through 40 minutes, and then as you mentioned, Dallas dominates period number three, outscores the Jets 3-0, wins 5-2 in game number three. From what you've seen of the first 9 periods of this series going into game four, like, what's your expectation for what we see on Tuesday night?
I mean, honestly, I expect game four to be an absolute war between two really, really good teams. I don't think it's going to be one-sided. Now, certainly something could happen and lead to that. But just like in game two, I think there's that sort of feeling that the Jets will have of they are trying to avoid going back to Winnipeg down 3-1 and facing multiple elimination games, right? I think the urgency is there. I think this is not like I'm coming up with some brilliant scheme that nobody else has thought of. I just think there's that inherent human nature that they're going to be more desperate and the Stars will have to match it. Now, these two teams are really, really close. There's not much there. There wasn't much between the Stars and the Avalanche in the first round either. So my pick in the beginning of the second round was Stars in 6. I thought the Stars were going to beat the Avs in 7. I got lucky and got it right. This one could easily go 6 or 7 games. I'm not writing this off at all, but I will say Dallas has got to be feeling pretty good that they get a chance to play game four on home ice, because whether you agree with it or not, the fact that Winnipeg hasn't won a road playoff game this year has to be going through people's minds. The fact that Hellebuck has had less than stellar numbers on the road in the playoffs, even though he looked really, really good in game two up in Winnipeg, and he made some good saves in game three. I just think that those thoughts are out there until they show otherwise. And so I'm not trying to say that they're going to collapse because they're on the road. I think they can go out and win a road game four, but it would be sloppy of us to not bring up the fact that continues to happen. Yep. Because it is a trend.
No doubt. Well, enjoy it. That atmosphere on Sunday afternoon looked bonkers at American Airlines Center. So I'm envious of you for being there for game four on Tuesday night. It honestly looks like just an absolute party. So enjoy it. Hey, it's awesome to be talking hockey at this time of year. Enjoy game four. And thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon. Really appreciate it, Owen.
Well, guys, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I have to say that Sunday afternoon and then tomorrow, it's a 7:00 Central Time. It's really nice not having these almost 9 p.m. local time starts. And you guys know all about that. Those are absolute beatings when a regulation game is ending around midnight or later, let alone overtime. So 7:00 Central Time tomorrow. I can't tell you how nice it is to just have a normal hockey start time for us people not getting the East Coast times.
No doubt. Enjoy it. Hey, thanks for doing this, Owen.
My pleasure, boys. Take care.
Owen Newkirk in Dallas, DLLS Sports. He's the host of the DLLS Stars podcast. Joining us here to wrap up the hour on Flames Talk, Stars will host the Jets in Game 4, 6 o'clock Calgary time on Tuesday night. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Shan Vergie, Cam Hughes have been our outstanding producers, and Owen joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Barcast hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.